Welcome to the podcast today, where we celebrate innovation for a happy planet. I am your host, Abigail Carroll. Many of you, especially those who love the Caribbean, are aware of what is now called the Sargasso Belt, a 5,000-mile-long belt of floating seaweed mass that stretches from the Gulf of Mexico all the way to Africa, hitting the southeast coast of the United States along the way. In normal doses, sargassum is a healthy macroalgae that, much like others, provides a habitat for sea life and sequesters carbon from the atmosphere. But an overabundance began in 2011 and has escalated to an ecological crisis for the affected area. This is a massive blow to the local marine ecosystem and the human one that depends on tourism and fishing in the area. Over the past few years, I've met a number of entrepreneurs who are focused on solving this problem. And today we're going to speak to one of them, Edward Shao of Project QR Sargasso, who is in the very early stages of building a company that seeks to harvest this seaweed in order to produce three very different products from it: fertilizer for our gardens, a substrate for coral reefs, and hydrogen to fuel our homes. This ambitious project was born of a simple desire to save the ecosystem that is being snuffed out by this sargassum. Let's let Edward tell us more. Welcome to the podcast, Edward.
It's an honor to be here. Thanks.
Well, tell me a little bit about Project QR Sargasso. What is it you guys are up to?
So I started Project QR Sargasso to basically fund my nonprofit. Project QR Restore is our NGO. For that, we're seeking to do blue carbon restoration in the Caribbean. So it's a funny thing. Like, most people create large companies first, and then they're like, all right, let's add like a rinky-dink NGO. But I actually wanted to really save the oceans. Like, not a lot of people were ready to pony up money. So I was like, you know what? Maybe we'll have to create a for-profit to fund that. And then around this time, I was traveling with my team in Mexico, and we were just seeing these mounds and mounds of brown, smelly seaweed washing up on the beach. I mean, you go to Florida, you go to Mexico, Guadalupe, you're just blown away by the smell of rotten eggs, you know, and you're like, whoa, this can't be good for the ocean. And everyone who thinks that is right. Basically, I realized we can't save the oceans without tackling the sargassum.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit just so that all the listeners understand what the sargassum problem is. You know, I live in Maine. It gets very dreary around March and April. It's a time when lots of people go to the Caribbean, and literally people have been coming back saying, you know, you should talk about the sargassum problem on your podcast. So what is sargassum? What's going on with it? Why is it a problem? And what's it doing to the world? Let's start there.
Sargassum. Sargassum is a genus. It's a genus of algae. We humans are Homo sapiens. You know, the genus would be Homo. Sargassum is actually a genus of around 150 different species of algae, stretching from the Ivory Coast, Africa, to Mexico, to Brazil. So it was always there. But most people didn't really hear about this until it started growing out of control. Now, why is it suddenly everywhere? There's a combination of factors. One is ocean warming, right? So you have ocean warmings, you know, some fish are dying out. Other species are like, great, we love higher temperatures. Boom, let's keep growing. Another major factor is, I would say, so a lot of that waste from humanity now comes back into the ocean, now gets discharged. And so the sargassum is like, yummy, yum, yum, yum.
So we have an overgrowth of sargassum, but the proportions are mind-blowing. It's covering wide swaths of the ocean. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Not only is it threatening the ocean, now it's playing a role into world hunger. You know, I mean, it's choking out entire ecosystems. Fishermen can't go in and fish. The sunlight can't reach our underwater ecosystems. It's a monumental problem.
It's just a huge, huge bed that's preventing light from getting through to the ocean. In normal quantities, it's part of the normal ecosystem, and it's actually a good thing, right?
It's actually a good thing. In normal quantities, turtles use it to nest. It is a habitat. What's washing up on the beach now are two main species, Sargassum natans, N-A-T-A-N-S, and Sargassum fluitans, F-L-U-I-T-A-N-S. We're finding that what's washing up on the beach is problematic. It's not the healthy one that is a habitat for marine animals. It's actually emitting that noxious rotten egg smell, that methane and
sulfur,
that hydrogen sulfide. And that's actually deadly to our coral reefs and basically almost everything underwater.
Wow. So we've got this problem, and you set out with a nonprofit to try to solve this problem through carbon, or was this a different related problem?
It's very interrelated. Like, I wanted to plant coral reefs, but then I was like, whoa, wait a minute. If we plant coral reefs and we don't do anything about the sargassum, like, our coral reefs aren't really going to survive, or oyster bays or seagrass meadows or mangroves.
Okay, so then you decided, all right, we got to get rid of the seaweed. Tell me about that.
A little bit about myself. I'm actually an environmental engineer by trade. So taking the processes we see in Mother Nature and trying to like tailor that in some ways, I saw this sargassum and I was like, huh. You know, from a completely, you know, geeky scientific standpoint, I was like, yes, we got a lot of bad stuff in it and we got heavy metals and all these noxious gases. But I mean, we also have carbon, we have nitrogen, we have organic nutrients that the soil loves. We have all these other great things. Maybe we can sort of tinker with, sort of like how a sculptor will chip away at the unwanted marble. You know, maybe let's start thinking about, hey, can we take out what we don't want and keep the rest?
There is an opportunity therein that you identified. So what is that opportunity specifically that you're trying to access?
There's a whole wave of new pioneers in this space. But from our perspective, we see a route for the sargassum to basically reduce the price of food and reduce the price of energy. Because if we process it right, it just keeps coming back. Boom, that's fertilizer.
It's immediate.
Yes.
You're not waiting for lots of research necessarily to get to your end in your market.
Exactly. We can feed our depleted topsoil with it. And with that rotten egg smell, you know, we can transmute that into energy. If it grows back, that means we can sustainably harvest it.
How do you go about capturing it? The QR in your project, QR Sargassum, is for Quintana Roo, which is in Mexico. You're starting your project down there?
Yeah, we have Mayan permission to, you know, build a site on their land. We have the blessing of Mayan elders. We have developing relations with the municipal regulatory agencies.
That's very exciting. The local governments and the Mayan elders, there's a host of reasons why they want to get rid of this. One of them is just purely economic, which is that tourists can't use the beaches.
Yeah, with how critical and tourism reliant some of these countries are, it hits their wallets. There's much more disenfranchisement.
So it's all washed up on the beach. How do you collect this?
Right now, we've partnered up with an existing collector. So we have our own methods that we're going to try out and play out on our own. There are a bunch of conventional methods. One is, I mean, you sweep it up, you throw it in a truck, right? Hazmat suit, gloves, PPE, the whole nine yards.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's that toxic. Wow.
Yeah. That's not going anywhere because it's like it keeps coming back. You know, there's more the next day. So we've actually partnered up with a startup. They're called SOS Carbon. They're already licensed to basically collect this. They have this cool device that you throw on a fisherman's boat. And so while the fisherman is, you know, doing his thing every day or her thing every day, the boat just passively collects it. And that way they can compress it into tankers and ship it around the world. This is a whole economy. And I'm realizing like, hey, if someone's collecting it, why don't we just work with them and like they get some money and then we're just the processor? You know, we don't have to do everything.
I think that's a very smart way to go about it. I have seen some very successful companies on this podcast that have basically brought different technologies together. None of them were theirs, but they've blown up just by having the right big vision and putting the right pieces together.
Yeah.
So you're going to process. How's that going to work?
Just in a nutshell, I mean, the processing is going to be split between Mexico and New York. You know, some of the, you know, solid and the tangible, the biomass and things like that we'll do in Mexico. So like Mayans, our peoples down in Mexico can get some work. Everyone gets a little piece. But the more technical stuff, when we're dealing with energy and things like that, we're actually tapping into federal funds. We're tapping into federal institutions that want a low-cost bioenergy. We're tapping into universities now. I have a gut feeling this is going to grow beyond me, and I want that. It's incredible. I mean, the wide swath of stakeholders. We can generate new science papers around it. Part of my role right now is like learning when to lean back and sort of delegate, because this is sort of a movement that's growing.
That's really exciting. And I just think you said something really interesting about, you know, a company growing beyond you. And I think that's a scary thing for a lot of founders. But if you can accept that, you just unlock vast potential for your company. And I think that's the right attitude going in, is that you become a steward of your own company. You don't have to hold it forever to have it be incredibly successful and for you to own that success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where are you in this whole process? Do you have a fertilizer on the market yet, or are you striving to that?
We've tested out, we've done examinations of our fertilizer, and to be honest, we're still detecting trace amounts of like arsenic, trace amounts. Part of this summer is that we want to like basically get more equipment to see there's better R&D that's coming out of MIT that we can sort of apply that to basically realize if we can get a very pure fertilizer, we have Cornell Cooperative Extension ready to certify it and really test it. But that's the problem right now. There's still that stuff, you know, and that's coming from the wastewater and all the stuff that we push out onto the ocean.
That's also the barrier to entry that you need, right? You don't want to be sending that stuff back into the water.
Absolutely not.
We'll be right back. A big thanks to the Maine Technology Institute, MTI, investing in innovation for a prosperous Maine. MTI is Maine's unique public-private partnership whose core mission is to diversify and grow Maine's economy by accelerating innovation in the state's targeted technology sectors. MTI offers grants, loans, equity investments, and services to support Maine entrepreneurs and organizations as they transform their innovative ideas into new products, services, and companies, leading to the creation of quality jobs for Maine people. For more information about MTI and its programs, please visit mainetechnology.org. For a blue economy to thrive, people need to use more sustainable products. But which products? And will consumers actually adopt them? Innovators like you are hustling to figure this out. Spark Number 9 can tell you if there's demand for your product. Spark markets your product before it's built, using online advertising so you launch smarter. Have a big idea? Vet it with Spark before you build. Visit Spark online at www.sparkno9.com or find them on LinkedIn. We're back with Happy Planet. In this second half, we will hear more about Edward's vision for hydrogen derived from seaweed and its potential to get households off the grid. I am really interested in this hydrogen solution. And I know you're this is still an R&D, but one of our most popular podcasts so far was about fuel cell stacks. But I'm really interested in what your vision for hydrogen is with your company, because you're talking about producing it in a solid state.
Yeah.
Can you tell me how that kind of works? And then what are the applications for that?
One of the biggest hurdles of facing the hydrogen industry, why they get a lot of flack right now, it's that they're facing a lot of issue on the transportation sector. You know, I mean, there's the issue that a lot of hydrogen methods currently require petroleum.
Right, the black hydrogen versus the green hydrogen. And
right. So without giving too much into detail, our process would essentially be blue hydrogen. I'm just going to leave it at that. The innovation part, what makes the solid state so good, you now have something that it looks like baking soda. I mean, we can throw it into Amazon boxes. We can ship it to your doorstep. We can have this in tankers. You can pack much more hydrogen in this solid state hydrogen. We get double the hydrogen density as compared to liquid organic hydrogen carriers. For our listeners, we're going to basically pack it in a synthetic salt. It's been around since World War II. But basically, like from that, we can think of maybe you can have a sort of an array in your backyard where you feed in that powder and then, you know, you dissolve it with water and then you can create two streams of hydrogen. We're now talking about decentralized energy.
We're going to order through Amazon. We're going to get boxes of powdered hydrogen from you.
Hopefully. I'm praying.
Someday.
I'm trying my best.
And then we're going to use the powder. We're going to mix it. We're going to have some sort of container that mixes water and hydrogen together to create the fluid. And that will fuel our houses. That will fuel our gas, our lawnmower.
Absolutely. I'm developing a Department of Energy program where our first application is like we're going to test it out in a church that needs badly needed repairs. They have a boiler from the early 1900s. We're going to start to basically see if, hey, maybe home heating, maybe building
heating. You'll have a lot of people praying that it doesn't blow up.
Again, this technology isn't new. The world is realizing, hey, this was done already. Let's just Lego block it in.
Well, I feel like so many of these things that we're looking at right now, it's what's old is new again. It's not even that it's cool. It's just that it makes sense. I love this idea that it's more decentralized because I think it gives us a lot of autonomy. So I think that's an incredibly interesting, just sort of mind-blowing idea that we're going to get this powder. We could be buying powder and mixing it with water. Does it need to be mixed with a very clean water right now?
No, not really. A lot of conventional hydrogen conversion technologies, like for example, Plug Power, they use like dirty water. You know, they use water from depleted oil fields in Texas. Right now, like the biggest problem is you gotta basically smooch all the bureaucrats. There are a lot of people all who have to be brought on the same vision because it's a lot of people are scared.
Yeah.
You know, conventional investors are scared. Governmental agencies are just like, oh, are we going to have money next month? Right. I mean, it's sort of fun, but it's sort of not fun. But it's honestly, it's very rewarding to be in this emerging space.
Let's say this works. Suddenly you're in energy. Everybody needs it. Will we run out of sargassum? What happens then?
I haven't thought about that yet. Honestly, like I sort of, as the founder, I laid it out. I was like, hey, maybe decades from now, if we're running low on sargassum, so maybe I think by then we'll pivot into like, I know there are people working on trying to farm this in the oceans.
So I know you're fundraising right now.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going? It also looks like you're using an interesting online funding tool.
Yeah, we're already working with very progressive fundraising platform, very eco-oriented, ocean-oriented, philanthropic-oriented fundraising platforms. Namely, one of them is WeFunder. So WeFunder is basically like GoFundMe, but for like startups now. And we're also working with Gaia Gives. Gaia Gives and Via Good. We're not just trying to make money. We're trying to achieve a societal good. Our hydrogen was originally invented to support our blue carbon restoration work.
How much are you looking for?
Right now, we're basically looking for around 700 to 800K to propel us for the next 3 years. The reason it's only around 700 to 800K is that we already have federal programs being built. You sort of need money to get money. The government will give you like 4 times that amount only if you have a certain level of money.
What's your big vision for this business? Like in 5 years, what do you want to see?
I feel like I'm not like most startup leaders. I'd love to see this permeate beyond just the private sector. I would love to see this in like education and just the way we think about energy. Maybe I want to see this sort of permeate the entire system of thinking, like maybe plant-based medicine, you know, sargassum medicines. You know, there's already sargassum notebooks, shoes, bioplastic.
So what's your advice for entrepreneurs today?
I know this is very harsh and realist, but it's just like you got to be selective with like where you give your time to. And you have to be okay with like, there are all sorts of coalitions and NGOs and think tanks that want to support work. It's not all about having that one, you know, Jeff Bezos like funded thing. That would be my advice.
So I met you through Bright Tides Accelerator, and I think you've done a couple more. The accelerator itself seems to be an evolving entity. And I'm really interested to know, you know, you've done a bunch of them. What do you think the role is of the accelerator to startups today? Is it an absolute must? If people are going into these accelerators, how should they see them and use them?
I love Bright Tide. I'm so thankful for Harry because he brought us all together from across the world. And those were the very early days where we realized, oh, wait, we're not alone. Like, I'm not the crazy one. And we gather together and we sort of, our lights empower each other to be fair, like there are some accelerators where you realize it's, oh, maybe it's not what I really was envisioning. Like maybe the accelerator sort of needs us just as much, if not more, than we need them. Just personally, like there were a lot of accelerators that I thought I needed that I was just like, maybe I don't need, because like this space is so quickly evolving. Accelerators are even just like, what do we do? You know, do we just do ocean projects? Do we throw in a hydrogen thing in there? You know, it's like constantly evolving. I know there are a lot of like industry accelerators, which right now I'm a little wary of, you know, if they say they're funded by like Exxon or like BP and they have a little contest, there is sort of still that predatory mindset. Yeah. And so I feel like young entrepreneurs have to watch out for that.
I mean, I see some of these big industry oil and gas companies appearing all over in the ocean space as investors, supporters. Basically, I've heard, I think these guys are going to be still be the powerhouses, but they're going to be doing renewables. So since you are in the energy field with the Sargassum Project, how do you see the role of these big legacy companies? Are you going to embrace them if they want to work with you? Like, how do you manage that?
It's very, very tricky. I mean, I'm also very spiritual. I believe that, you know, if you unconditionally like love and just spread pureness, it'll sort of permeate through everywhere. So I sort of embrace that in my work. Like if we push for environmentalism, whoever comes into contact with us, that will rub off on them. So, you know, right now I sort of use my gut, but I do think that, I mean, companies are trying to adapt because they realize the old ways are not sustainable anymore.
So are you optimistic about the future?
I'm very optimistic. We're just going to see like a fusion of, you know, like maybe Mayan plus scientist fusion thinking where they're just like, oh, you and I are both saying the same thing. We're both thinking the same thing. We just say it in different languages, but it's like we're both seeing the same thing that, you know, Earth is just energy and like we can take care of it. Like the bridging of the old and new. And I think it's beautiful and I'm optimistic.
People like you make me optimistic. And that's why I started this podcast, to spread the good news. Thank you, Edward, for joining us today. It's been a real pleasure hearing about your ambitious plans for Project QR Sargasso. Let's hope that Edward and others interested in this space can find enough utility in harvesting sargassum that the ecosystem in this 5,000-mile swath of ocean can be restored. Thank you for listening. Please follow Happy Planet wherever you listen and leave us a rating and review. It really does help new listeners discover the show. Happy Planet was reported and hosted by me. I am also the executive producer. The talented Dylan Hoyer is our producer and editor. Composer George Brandel Egloff created our theme music. Learn more about my work and get in touch by visiting happyplanetpodcast.com.